acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 56, Mayan for Strength, Tuesday, October 7th, 2014. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yin Hu Chaiyuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode can be found on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. You can also find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. Yarns at Yin Hu has a Facebook page, and the podcast is available on iTunes. This episode features the following segments: a little bit of learning, ever-expanding skill set, yarn lover at large, the front porch, and double happiness. This week, I'd like to welcome new listener Jan from Washington, D.C. Her Ravelry username is Stacks, and Jan took the time to introduce herself on the introductions board on Ravelry. She's a recently retired educator and now has a lot more time for knitting, spinning, and sewing. That sounds excellent, Jan, and welcome to the group. There were also some recent iTunes reviews from Judy in the Dyes, who mentioned that she enjoyed the shared interests aspect of the podcast, and Turbo Knitter, who said, quote, "You'll want to start from the beginning and listen to the podcast." I really enjoy reading iTunes reviews and seeing 5-star ratings appear. So if you've been enjoying Yarns at Yin Hu or any other podcasts, I hope you'll take the time to leave a 5-star rating or a review for some that you like a lot. I have some announcements of contest winners. Laura Nelkin was kind enough to contribute a signed copy of her new publication, Knockout Knits, and the contest was open for a few episodes, and there were 37 entries. The winning entry, chosen by random number generator, was number 29, Painter Mom, who is Susan from Worcester, Mass. Congratulations, Painter Mom. Please send me a personal message on Ravelry with winner in the subject line and let me know your mailing information so I can send that out to you. I've also drawn a winner for the September Bulk Bins Cook-Along, and we talked in September about barley and cooking with barley. Post number 11 was the randomly selected winner, and that was Judy in the Dyes from Gainesville, Georgia. And Judy was the one who suggested a lemony barley salad with kale pesto that appeared in Food and Wine and actually inspired me to try that recipe during the month of September. So congratulations, Judy. You are the winner of a pattern on Ravelry at $7 or less, so you can let me know what you would like to receive. The Bulk Bins Cook-Along is my year-long challenge to myself and my listeners to shop at the bulk bins in my local health food store and try out products and recipes that I might not otherwise consider. So each month has been dedicated to some ingredient or other. We cook along, we share recipes, I open a thread on Ravelry, and you can always tag your posts and photographs with hashtag bulkbinscal on social media. In October, I am challenging myself to experiment a little bit more with herbs, teas, and seeds. These are all things that can be found in my local bulk bins, and I don't shop from them too often, especially for teas. I'm not a very big tea drinker. My preference is naturally for coffee. I could use a bit less caffeine in my life, and so during the month of October, I am going to try to engage in a bit more tea drinking and maybe combine some different herbal blends. In a little bit of learning today, I'd like to just review a bit the difference between herbs and spices. I have talked about it just a bit in a previous podcast because spices were featured in a previous month. Herbs, whether they are dried or fresh, are harvested from the leaf of a plant, whereas spices are harvested from other parts of the plant. So they could be stems, seeds, bark, all different other components of the plant. And herbs are very useful for using fresh as well as for drying, or sometimes depending on the type of plant, for freezing and using later. In the northeast of the United States where I live, this is the time of year where you get your last fresh herbs and you start to think about drying or freezing herbs before a killing frost occurs. Many herbs are quite hardy and will continue to be productive in the garden even during the winter months. So my mom is fond of throwing some burlap over herbs, and even under snow cover, they are usable throughout the winter. My garden is a potted garden, and I do have a variety of herbs. In fact, most of the things in my potted garden are herbs, and now is the time when I am either bringing them closer to the house so they don't suffer from the cold weather, or I'm harvesting things and bringing them inside. If you have herbs in your garden, or you dry or save herbs, I would love to hear about it in the Ravelry thread. Ever-expanding skill set. This week, I'd like to talk a little bit about chia seeds. Particularly chia seed breakfast pudding. This has been all the rage in discussions at my workplace, and I was at first skeptical, but I have been making this dish for breakfast. It's simple, it's easy, and it's pretty nutritious, as I will explain. Chia seeds originated with the ancient Mayans and Aztecs and were a staple in their diet. And in fact, the word chia is derived from a Mayan word meaning strength. Aztec warriors relied on the chia seeds to increase their stamina and boost their strength. And even today, chia seeds are a favorite of athletes who need sustained strength over a long time, for example, long distance runners or mountain climbers. This information is from the folks at Bob's Red Mill, which sells chia seeds on the shelves in the supermarket, and they can also be available in bulk bins. 1 tablespoon of chia seeds provides 20% of the dietary fiber that's suggested for your daily intake. It has 60 calories and contains 6% of the protein required. The chia seed breakfast pudding that I've been making goes like this, and there are a number of variations. I've tried a few of them, but this is the way that works for me. If I'm going to engage in the process of making this, I make enough for 3 mornings at one time. Any less than that, I feel like I'm just going through the same process all the time. And any more than that, I feel like the quality kind of deteriorates with things sitting in the refrigerator for more than 3 days. So I line up three small single serving containers. They could be Tupperware or they could be glass containers. And into each, I put 1/3 cup of chia seeds. And then I add 3/4 cup of rice milk. And then I add a little bit of honey, maple syrup, or a little bit of raw sugar. I need something to make it a little bit sweet. And the rice milk that I have been purchasing is an organic rice milk with vanilla in it. I've also flavored my own rice milk with vanilla beans. I put the lids on each of these containers, shake them vigorously, and then put them in the refrigerator. This is ready to eat in a matter of hours, but I think it's best overnight. And I don't really like it too loose and runny, and I don't like it too gelatinous and thick. So this 1/3 cup chia seeds to 3/4 cup rice milk is sort of hits that sweet spot for me. And this has been a very nutritious breakfast. It's not incredibly exciting. I like to put a little bit of dried cranberries and dried coconut flakes on the top to make it more interesting. But it's a completely serviceable breakfast and it doesn't take a lot of time. And importantly, it doesn't take a lot of cooking time in the morning. The front porch. On October 1st, I began a project that I hope will be completed in time to wear to Rhinebeck, to the New York Sheep and Wool Festival. I was late in beginning this project because I wanted to complete some asymmetrical projects I had on the needles, in particular the batade shawl, which will be a gift for my sister, and the Planorbis corneus shawl designed by Hunter Hammerson. I have completed both of those, and I would like to talk a great deal more about the Planorbis corneus shawl. So I will be returning to that project in another episode. But it is complete, and on October 1st, I was able to begin the Dixon. It's a skirt designed by Nora Gaughan, and it has a lot of cabling detail. I'm knitting it in Cascade 220 Heathers in the Lichen colorway. I began it on size 6 needles, and now I have moved to size 7 needles, which I will continue throughout the project. This skirt begins with a ribbed waistline, and in order for the skirt to stay on, the ribbing needs to be pretty tight and pretty stretchy. So I was knitting this and getting a lot of questions about, that's a skirt. Are you sure it's not a turtleneck? Are you sure it's going to fit you? Have you tried it on? And at that point, I was using circular needles that were not long enough to allow me to try it on. I kept stretching it and I felt like it should grow enough to fit me. But now I'm pleased to say that I have knit the first of 5 balls of yarn that are needed for this project. I've graduated to a much longer size circular needle, so I was able to slip it over my hips. And yes, it does fit. And I think it's stretchy enough that the skirt will stay up, because 5 balls of wool yarn is a pretty heavy skirt, and I wouldn't want something that was pulling down constantly or I felt like I needed a belt to hold it up. So I think the design of the skirt is sufficient to keep it on. The challenge now is whether or not I can complete this project by the 19th of October. I thought about it and I thought, okay, if I have 5 balls of yarn, and I want to complete this in about 18 days. That's about one ball of yarn every 3 or 4 days. It is now the 7th, and yesterday on the 6th, I used up my first ball of yarn. So I'm a little behind in that regard, but I've also been incredibly busy with other things and I haven't had a good deal of knitting time. So I'm hopeful that over this coming week, and especially during the upcoming weekend when I don't have too much planned, that I will be able to catch up and make progress on the skirt so that I can wear it to Rhinebeck, to the Sheep and Wool Festival. My plan is to visit Rhinebeck on Sunday. I have not made any hotel or housing arrangements, so it may be that I just drive up for the day and drive home in the evening, or it could be that I think about staying over on one of the nights. I know that hotel and motel space is really non-existent right now. So we'll see what happens. But as of now, that is my plan. I think it would be interesting to visit this festival on a Sunday. Last year, I was there for my very first time on a Saturday, and it was unbelievably crowded and overwhelming. It was exciting. I mean, the energy was fantastic. But I think I would like to experience what it's like to be there on a Sunday. I've heard it's a little more low-key, it's a little more relaxed, it's not as frenetic. And I think that would suit my needs at this time. Primarily, my interests are in visiting with other knitters, maybe meeting up with other podcasters, meeting listeners, I hope, and frequenting the book tent and considering Christmas shopping for folks in my family. I'm not really in need of very much in the way of yarn or fiber at this point. So primarily my shopping would be concerned with finding gifts for other people and just doing a lot of visiting and eating. Last year, I did not eat at the festival. I bought coffee, I had lunch with me, I had water, and I was just so taken up by the whole thing that I really didn't even stop to eat. So this year, it's definitely a priority to try the artichoke dish that I hear everyone talking about. Definitely sample some beer in the beer tent, maybe sample some other local products. I heard there's a Polish food truck that is very reasonably priced and maybe not as mobbed as some of the other things. So I would love to try that and just really enjoy a little more of the ambiance of the festival and be a little less concerned with the purchases that I make. This past weekend was a very big blowout weekend at my local yarn store, Mountain Knits and Pearls in East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. Mountain Knits and Pearls was host to a visit from Maggie Jackson of Maggie Knits. Probably her most popular collection of knitwear is Maggie's Ireland, which is kind of a compilation of a lot of her different designs. She's a knitwear designer on a very large scale, and most of her things are big, bold designs, blocks of color. I'm trying to think what else characterizes buttons, bobbles, and other kinds of notions are characteristic of her knitwear. And she sells books of patterns, but she also sells kits because the yarn in the kits is also curated by Maggie, and she designs very much based on these yarn lines that she's developed over the years. Friday night at Mountain Knits and Pearls, there was a fashion show of Maggie Jackson's knitwear. And there were six of us who volunteered to be models for the fashion show. And Maggie had been there for quite a long time before the show, setting everything up with Joanne, who is the owner of the shop. And she had racks of her knitwear, and it was all separated by who would be wearing it based on the size of the model. And also, very important was coloration. So she was very concerned with what color hair we had and what our hair was like and our complexion and coloring and what pieces she had selected for us to model in the show. She ran the fashion show and the six of us paraded in and out and changed in the back room behind the shop. And basically we're on our feet for about 2 hours. It was exciting and it was exhausting and it was hot and we all felt nervous because it looks very straightforward what a garment is supposed to look like when you put it on. And I just had this feeling several times, like as soon as I took the garment off the hanger, suddenly it wasn't clear to me how it should be worn. And then I would have all kinds of anxiety putting it on, and I wasn't the only one. We would be looking at each other and trying to figure out how is this supposed to go. And within the first 20 minutes, we realized that with Maggie Jackson's designs, there's not really the way it's supposed to go, because we would walk out there feeling a little bit insecure about the way we had arranged the garment on ourselves. And then Maggie would immediately begin to explain, well, you could wear it like this, and then she would unbutton it and she would turn it around and upside down and rebutton it or tie it, or you could wear it like this, or you could wear it like this. And she was very intent in the fashion show on explaining the diversity of her designs and the versatility of them. So we set aside a little bit of our anxiety about that. There was great attendance at the fashion show. There was a little cheese and wine beforehand, and there was just such great energy in the shop. The shop, by the way, had been transformed. I mean, the amount of work that the proprietor, Joanne, of Mountain Knits and Pearls did to put this together was really overwhelming. I mean, the back room is usually just a bunch of tables with chairs around them for knitting classes. And, you know, there's a lot of storage back there. Things are sitting around. And suddenly it was transformed into a display and a runway and a whole seating area. And then the next day, the same space was transformed back into a classroom again. And there were racks with Maggie's garments still there so folks could try them on. I was able to attend the Saturday class. It was a 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. class called Not Another Scarf. And we selected some of the yarn from Maggie's line of textiles. And then we selected a number of novelty, smaller pieces of yarn. And Maggie proceeded to get us started on a project that could go in a number of different directions. It could be a scarf, but it could also be a wall hanging, a pillowcase, a table runner, a small handbag. She really showed us the versatility of working with a few simple techniques, such as splitting a design and moving up in small steps or increments. So if you cast on 40 some stitches, then you might only work 10 or 20 of them at a time. And you might work in different bits of yarn. And you might leave knots and ends hanging out for texture and for interest. She showed us some of the techniques for design elements that she frequently uses in her garments, so that if you purchased a pattern or you purchased a kit, you would have hands-on experience with doing that set of techniques if you were to follow the pattern. At lunch, folks tried on a number of the pieces and she went through explaining a little bit more about them and about her philosophy behind design. And always she kept us going with her amazing accent and her wealth of Irish jokes and Irish colloquialisms. And everyone in the class, I think there were about 14 of us there, was very engaged, interested, certainly liked to chat, or chin wag, as Maggie called it, chin wagon, but then was very capable of quieting down when she was giving instructions. And it brought me back to Laura Nelkin and her interview, and Laura saying, you know, one of the things she can suggest is be quiet. If you've paid the money for the class and you've invested the time to be in the class, when the instructor is talking, stop talking. So Maggie was very good at giving us instructions that were clear and specific. She gives very good instructions. She gives them so well, it's kind of like a dentist giving you Novocaine and you don't even know that it's happening to you. She would just set out a bunch of instructions and you would be following them and you wouldn't even realize that you had listened to them. It was just this seamless process. And then she would tell some anecdotes and tell some stories and seem to have a very good sense of where we were with following that set of instructions and then give us the next set of instructions. I felt very comfortable with the pace of the class and the different things that we were asked to do. And compared to a lot of folks in the class, I'm a very new knitter. So sometimes I have a little bit of anxiety about other knitters are going to be able to cast on all these stitches so much more quickly than I can. And oh my gosh, I should hurry. And then you mess up a bunch of times. But I just felt like I could do it. I was relaxed. I wasn't concerned with how quickly people around me were completing the same set of tasks. I was just working on my own project and thinking about the yarn that I chose, which we chose two balls of her linen yarn, which is a linen cotton blend. I chose a very natural linen color, what I think of when I think of linen. And then I chose a very bright pink color because I was encouraged by Trisha Weatherston to, you know, today is the day to go outside of your comfort zone. So I chose those two. And then for the bits of novelty yarn, I chose more neutral colors like browns and taupes. And that worked nicely. I'm pretty pleased with the progress I made on my not a scarf. I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it, and I'm not actively working on it at this moment because all of my energy is being focused on the Dixon skirt. But I think this is something that I will return to, and I will certainly return to those techniques again. I think that even though Maggie Jackson gave us a pattern during the class, I know enough to be able to riff and improvise on my own, given the techniques that I learned. Maggie Jackson introduced us to a number of Irish colloquialisms, chin wagon being among them. And I thought chin wagon could be an interesting new segment for the podcast. I don't share a lot of shenanigans or exciting adventures typically. I'm a pretty serious person, so not a lot of crazy things happen in my life, and I am very comfortable with that. Craziness is not something I seek. But sometimes I do have a little story to share, so I thought that chin wagon would be a good segment title in an episode when I'd like to share an anecdote about that. And it just so happens that This week, after my podcast and talking about my pleasure in spinning with a little Turkish drop spindle that was printed on a 3D printer and made by Turtle Maid, I distinctly recall my remarks in a previous episode that this spindle would be a great thing to work with if you were working around children, or you were in a situation where you were worried about a very delicate or expensive spindle getting damaged or broken or lost. I've started taking the Turkish spindle on walks with me, and I'm not worried about dropping it in the gravel or anything like that. So, wouldn't you know that my spindle suffered a little episode. Outside of our front door at Yinhu, we have a bench with all of our shoes and sneakers under it because we tend not to wear shoes inside of our house, sort of in keeping with Chinese tradition, and we have painted floors, so it makes a lot of sense. So there's an 8-foot bench outside of our front door, and at one end of the bench, there was a bottle of bug spray. And at the other end of the bench, there was a brightly colored bag with my drop spindle and some fiber in it. There were 6 feet of bench with nothing on it. Where did Samuel sit to take off his shoes? He sat on my spindle bag, and it broke the shaft. I said, why did you sit on my spindle? There's a whole bench. He said, I didn't see it. I said, what are you talking about? It's this brightly colored bag. Like, how could you miss that this was sitting here? He said, I didn't see it. You shouldn't leave things sitting on the bench if you don't want people to sit on them. Can you believe he said that? So I was thinking about an episode of the Knitmore Girls where Gigi, in one of her, I'm pretty sure it was like in a Mother Knows Best segment, Gigi said, don't put your knitting on a seat. Don't put your spindle on a seat, because people see a seat like a chair or a bench and they think sit down. They don't think about what might be there that they could sit on and break. I can't believe Samuel broke my spindle, and it's my fault. I shouldn't have left my spindle on a seat. So now I will remember that. And now I have the very kind people at Turtle Maid, Jen and Scott, to thank for shipping out another shaft for my spindle. The whorl parts of the spindle, I think you would need a hammer to break those. But the shaft, if you put pressure on it in the wrong spot, it will break, as I found. And they are sending me a new shaft for my spindle. And I've also ordered a few additional spindles and one of them in a larger size as well. So I hope to be able to use them to do some teaching and also just to show anyone who's interested in learning how to spin a bit more. And I think this would be an interesting addition to the spindles I have from Dawning Dreams, which are more traditional top whorl spindle style. So I'd like to thank the folks at Turtle Maid for that. I'm very eager to get my package. And I hope that if you are in the habit of putting your knitting or your spinning on a seat, that you will learn from my misfortune. Venus, over the past week, I have been so fortunate as to be informed that I am twice a winner of prizes from other groups on Ravelry. And I just received 2 packages yesterday when I checked my mailbox. In there were some tea cakes, the Madeline Tosh tea cakes, and a coupon code for a mitts pattern using all of these different varieties of colors of Madeline Tosh yarn to create these beautiful mitts. So I'd like to thank Chris and the U University podcast for that amazing prize. It is really spectacular and it's packaged very nicely as well. I was also the winner of a braid of fiber from Miss Babs. And the way I was selected for winning this particular prize is that I completed 4 ounces of spinning fiber, including silk, with the Jenkins Woodworking Group for the Fall Mini Spin Along. And I was selected as the winner of a braid of Miss Babs fiber. And I could go online and choose the braid I wanted. I chose Merino Bamboo Silk Blend in the Bookworm colorway, which is sort of like browns and greens and pops of white. So I'm very excited to be the recipient of those prizes. And thank you to the Jenkins Woodworking Group and the U University Group for welcoming me and for the great conversation. Thanks for listening. Music in today's episode is So Wheat, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you liked what you heard in today's episode, I hope you will consider leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire, just like Linda Curtis, but out on a wire. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Nature's ever get you high till your face is smile. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature.